भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. We are now on Canto 6, text number 7. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Now I'll just run through those. Na Chet Iha Eva Pachitim Yata Amhasa Kritasya Kuryat Manaha Ukta Panibi Dhruvam Saha Vai Pritya Narakan Upaiti Kitita Mei Bhavata Tigma Yatana Sri Shuka Uvacha Na Ched Ehaiva Pachitim Yatham Hasa Na Ched Ehaiva Pachitim Yatham hasa Kritasya kuryan mana ukta panibi Dhruvam savaya pritya narakhan upaiti Yakitita me bhavata stigma yatana Shri Shuka Uvacha Na Ched Ehaiva Pachitam Yatham Hasa Kritasya Kuryan Mano Ukta Panibi Dhruvam Savai Pritya Narakhan Upaiti Ye kitita me bhavata stigma yatanha. Shri Shuka Uvacha. Na ched ihaiva pachitam yatham hasa. Kritasya kuryan mano ukta panibi. Dhruvam savai pritya narakan upaiti Ye kitita me bhavata stigma yatana
Thank you.
Anyone else? Matajis? Shri Shuka Uvacha. Srila Shukdev Goswami said, Na not chait if eha within this life eva certainly apachitim counteraction atonement Yata, duly, amhasa, kritasya, when one has performed sinful activities. Kuryat, performs, mana, with the mind, ukta, words, panibi, and with the senses, Dhruvam, undoubtedly, sa, that person, vai, indeed, pritya, after death, narakan, different varieties of hellish conditions, upaiti, attains, ye, which, kirtitaha, were already described, made by me, bhavata, unto you, tigma yatana, in which there is very terrible suffering. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki. Shukdeva Goswami replied, My dear King, if before one's next death, whatever impious acts one has performed in this life with his mind, words, and body are not counteracted through proper atonement according to the description of the Manu Samhita and other Dharma Shastras, one will certainly enter the hellish planets after death and undergo terrible suffering, as I have previously described to you. Please repeat. Shukdeva Goswami replied, My dear King, if before one's next death, whatever impious acts one has performed in this life, with his mind, words, and body, are not counteracted through proper atonement according to the description of the Manu Samhita and other Dharma Shastras, one will certainly enter the hellish planets after death and undergo terrible suffering as I have previously described to you. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions that although Maharaj Parikshit was a pure devotee, Shukdev Goswami did not immediately speak to him about the strength of devotional service, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 14:26. Mam cha yogi abhacharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Devotional service is so strong that if one fully surrenders to Krishna and takes fully to his devotional service, the reactions of his sinful life immediately stop. Elsewhere in the Gita, verse 1866, Lord Krishna urges that one give up all other duties and surrender unto him. And he promises, Aham tvam sarva pape bhyo mokshayish yami. I shall free you from all sinful reactions and give you liberation. Therefore, in response to the inquiries of Pariksit Maharaj, Shukdeva Goswami, his guru, could have immediately explained the principle of bhakti. But to test Pariksit Maharaj's intelligence, he first prescribed atonement according to karma kanda, the path of fruitive activities, or actions designed to bring pleasure. For karma kanda, there are 80 authorized scriptures such as Manu Samhita, which are known as Dharma Shastras. In these scriptures, one is advised to counteract his sinful acts by performing other types of fruitive action. This was the path first recommended by Shukdeva Goswami to Maharaj Pariksit, and actually it is a fact that one who does not take to devotional service must follow the decision of these scriptures by performing pious acts to counteract his impious acts. This is known as atonement. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. My dear King, if before one's next death, whatever impious acts one has performed in this life with his mind, words, and body are not counteracted through proper atonement according to the description of the Manu Samhita and other Dharma Shastras, one will certainly enter the hellish planets after death and undergoes terrible suffering, as I have previously described to you. This is a very interesting verse because it shows the way a spiritual master will treat or act towards his disciple to test exactly where the disciple is at spiritually. What spiritual intelligence has he cultivated over the period of his life, and especially during the period that this discourse has been taking place? We know it will be a 7-day discourse. I don't know what day they're on. But through association with a person like Shukdev Goswami, just being in his presence and hearing his pearls of devotional wisdom, by just listening to them, one becomes purified. His intelligence becomes purified, his mind becomes purified, his body becomes purified, his entire life becomes purified, and his perception and conception of life change. His conception, he realizes he's not the body, nor is he his mind or his intelligence or his false ego, that he is the spirit soul eternal, existing within the heart just beside the supreme soul. This is what the devotee realizes in the association of a great spiritual master like Shukdeva Goswami. So Shukdeva Goswami, he's testing Parikshit. Is he simply going to accept what I tell him? If that's all it is, then I really can't go very much farther. I can only stop there and just tell him, yes, well, what has to be done is you have to counteract all sinful actions with counteractions, and those counteractions must be actions which give atonement. Those actions can be of two kinds. One kind is through various types of pious activities. Doing good things, giving food to the poor, building bridges, building parks, or any kind of charity, giving gifts to the Brahmins, anything which will cause you to give up some of yourself or give up your time for other people's welfare and benefit. And that is one form, we call that pious activities, and that can minimize any or even eradicate the sinful reaction that is going to come to you either shortly, in a few minutes, a few hours, a few days, a few years, or a few lives. But come it will. There is no stopping it. It is bound to happen. Sometimes people commit sinful activities and they don't get any immediate reaction, so they think that, well, God obviously sanctions this. Otherwise he would have clobbered me, he would have kicked me, would have smacked me, but he didn't do it. Look, I'm here to commit more sins, and he's not doing anything. So this is their ignorance, this is their stupidity, this is their nonsense. They don't know that the karma that we are experiencing in this life is, generally speaking, scheduled. The major events of our life are already scheduled. When you will go to school, or if you will go to school. When you will get married, if you will get married. When you will have children. when you will slip on a banana peel. When everything is already predetermined. All of these things. When people will insult you. When people will praise you. Of course, it's already, you might say the film has already been written. It's only a matter of playing out. And the important thing is how we will respond to what plays out. If we respond to what plays out, for example, somebody insults us, or somebody shames us, somebody pushes us, if we become very hostile, aggressive, and push back, shout back, it could result in a fight, and the fight could result in some black eyes, bloody lips, broken teeth, or teeth just thrown out of the mouth. It can result in any one of those things if a person responds in an aggressive, hostile manner. Or there may be no response whatsoever. Somebody says to you, "Hey, fool! Hey, idiot!" And a person who has cultivated humility, he will say, "You calling me?" And she says, "Yeah, I'm calling you." He says, "How did you know I was an idiot? Who told you? I've been trying to keep it a secret, but somebody has some knowledge and wisdom. People praise me." They said, like Sanatana Goswami was saying, people praise me. They think I'm very knowledgeable and learned. But you know that I'm a fool. Thank you very much for reminding me of what I am. So the person looks at you as if, is he crazy or what? I expected to get his gander up. I expected to have him say something of an insulting nature, showing that he was affected, he was disturbed, he was upset. But he didn't get upset. Why? Didn't get upset because he was Krishna conscious. And a Krishna conscious person knows that he is tiny, lower than the straw in the street, insignificant. And he gives respect to everyone, especially to those who may cast aspersions or call him by various insulting names. He doesn't take it as an insult. He takes that as a benefit, as I just said, as a reminder
that he is not as great as he may think he is. Because the tendency of the false ego is to keep accumulating different types of accomplishment, different types that can come in the form of beauty. I'm so beautiful. Look at me. I got my facelift. And now I've got these chins. I got them removed. My cheekbones a little higher. Look at this straight Brad Pitt nose. It's just perfect. And my hair, I've had that done. Beauty, false ego. People, oh, you look gorgeous. You look wonderful. You look like $1 million. And the person is thinking, yeah, I'm so much better than I was before the facelift, before the hair dye or the hair bleach or whatever it was. So beauty, wealth, suddenly he comes into millions of dollars. I'm better now. Everybody's just poor. Maybe they're making $25,000, $50,000 a year. I got millions in the bank now. I'm better. I'm greater. I'm higher. And he looks at the world in a different way. He thinks he's above, and this is his false pride. And then one day he falls ill and all the money has to go for the doctors. And now he's poor again. And he doesn't want to face the world because he was walking around so proud, so puffed up, so apparently strong. So beauty and wealth and influence and power, all these build, inflate, and make bigger like a balloon the false ego. Beauty and wealth and strength or influence, fame, that really blows up the false ego. Everybody's calling out your name. The newspapers are printing your name. The magazines, your name is being called. TV, they're mentioning the name. So the more you hear your name or you hear people are calling your name, you begin to believe that this name is godlike. It's so marvelous. It's so wonderful. I'm like God. Everybody says God in the morning when they say their prayer. Not everybody, but when they say their prayers. And now people are calling my name. How many times are they calling it? Sometimes you can go to press service. They will tell you how many times your name is mentioned in the newspapers all over the world. Like Google, you can actually find out. If anybody's printing something, it immediately gets onto the online, and you can see that thousands and thousands of times you've been mentioned. So this gives a person an inflated sense of his importance. Prabhupada often mentions that he's in competition with Krishna. He doesn't want Krishna to be mentioned. He doesn't want God to be heard, talked about. He wants himself. Because as soon as God is, well, that takes the spotlight, the limelight away from me. And I want to be the center of attention. So this is the mood. This is the manner. This is the way of the false ego. And also material knowledge is another form of false ego. You go to school, you get a high school diploma, then you get college degree, then you go for your master's degree, then you get a PhD degree, and you have so much knowledge, you feel so much superior in knowledge to everybody else. It may be in literature, it may be in chemistry, it may be in accounting, and then you get another degree, maybe in writing, or in publishing, anyone, and so you have two PhDs. Then you get a third PhD. And you go on TV and you talk about these different subjects. And people respect you. They honor you. They glorify you. They mention all of your titles. And you feel so big, so great, so grand, so wonderful. And then one day, gone. Finished. No more. You're lying in a hospital bed and nobody's talking about you anymore. Thank you. All right, we can turn it off now. Thank you. We've enjoyed the little musical introduction or interlude. So we can, for those of you on the internet who didn't hear that, it was a little song that was played, musical selection on somebody's cell phone. That's what I was referring to, because I don't want to leave you out of all the fun. So anyway. The important point is that then it's gone. It's over. What do you do when it's all gone? What do we do? All of these accumulations that we have, which build the false ego, then the little pin comes, the balloon, it immediately collapses. There's nothing there. It's like a big nothing. working and working so that we can have the praise, the adoration, the profit, the distinction, the glorification, and then it's all gone, working for nothing. And then all there is a tombstone or some ashes scattered upon in the Atlantic Ocean or the Pacific Ocean, and if you're lucky, over the Ganges. So what is the value of all this? It's like never asking the most fundamental, the most basic question. What am I doing here? Why am I working so hard? You know, like a mudha, like an ass. Why am I acquiring and cultivating all of this when I'm going to lose it? Is there anything that I can cultivate and acquire that will give me happiness in the form of inner peace, inner joy, inner strength, inner freedom? Is there anything I can accomplish that will last when I die? And the answer is yes, that's what this whole book is about. It's about achieving just what I mentioned, inner happiness. Inner happiness comes from pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When Krishna is pleased, and how is Krishna pleased? He's pleased by the process of devotional, loving devotional service. And when devotees perform service with their whole heart fixed upon Krishna, then Krishna brings them in the form of grace close to Him. As Krishna says, in all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. So he says we should depend upon him. He also says, as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So that surrender means you give up this false ego before you die. That false ego is going to collapse. It won't disappear, but it will collapse. The balloon will collapse, and there will be a feeling of worthlessness, a feeling of non-accomplishment, because nobody's celebrating you, nobody's glorifying you, nobody's honoring you. For example, we had our past president, Ronald Reagan. He was one of the most powerful men in the world. 2 terms as a president, 2 terms as a governor of California, many years as a movie star. He was glorified endlessly. And then, after he left the presidency, not too long after, he became afflicted with Alzheimer's disease. And Alzheimer's disease is a form of dementia. And dementia, what happens is that a person loses his memory. And it's gradual. And slowly but surely, one begins to look at one's friends of the past. You can't remember them. You can remember things from the far distant, but the things of the immediate past, the last 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, very difficult to understand. A person may even forget where he is. Like somebody I know called me up this morning, and the person said, "I don't know." The person has dementia, and the person says, "I don't know where I am. What am I? Where am I? You're my son. You must know where I am." So she didn't know where she was. So I told where she was, and I told her exactly the street and all that. Oh, okay. And I put notes for her on a bulletin board. But she was too sleepy to read the notes, and that often happens. So this is a very pathetic situation. So here he was, one of the great, quotes-unquote, persons, and yet there he lost his memory of all of his greatness. So he was just reduced virtually to a zero. What a pathetic situation. What a big illusion. We live in this illusion thinking that it's going to go on forever. Why? Because we identify ourselves with our physical body. And since the soul is now identified with the body and the soul knows it's eternal, it confuses itself with its eternality of the body. It tries to eternalize the body and think that the body is going to go on. On reflection, on consideration, it knows, yes, the body is going to die. But we don't work, we don't act with reflection and consideration, we just work, thinking, feeling, willing that this body is going to go on and on and on, never end, until one day we just fall dead in the street, fall dead in our bed. So now we have in this very interesting verse, it's mentioning that people often seek atonement. They commit a sin, they go to church, they say, "Father, they go to the confession, they say, I've committed a sin, but what can I do to be absolved from the sin? I don't want to go to hell." So the father, he tells him, okay, you chant so many Our Fathers, so many Hail Marys, and he does that, and he says, okay, you're absolved. The problem here is that, although the person is absolved, or may be absolved, from the sin that he committed, there has been no change in the heart. And unless there is a change in the heart, there is no possibility for him or her to not commit the same sin again and again and again. Therefore, as Shukdev Goswami is saying, well, do atonement. And a few pages later, Pariksit says, what's the point of atonement? You atone for a sin, and then you do it again. Because the tendency hasn't been destroyed. So where do these tendencies come from? The tendency starts out it starts from the modes of nature. We acquire different modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. We acquire them according to what we contact in our thoughts and feelings, in our words, what we talk about, and what we do. Certain actions are in the mode of goodness. You read this in the Bhagavad Gita. Certain words are in the mode of goodness. Certain thoughts are in the mode of goodness. Certain feelings are in the mode of goodness. So if we act in the mode of goodness, the more we contact that particular mode, the more that mode will manifest or be predominant in our life. Someone has once very nicely said that if you keep thinking of a particular thought to do something, eventually it will develop into an action and you will do it. If you keep repeating that action, eventually it will develop into a habit. If you keep repeating that habit again and again, it will develop into a tendency. And if you keep manifesting or expressing that tendency, then it will develop into a destiny. So our destiny starts out with the modes of nature. That's where it all starts. The living entity, bewildered by false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and comes to the level of Brahman, of absolute truth, of Krishna. So, the problem is not to deal with the symptom. The problem is you may have to initially deal with symptoms, but the ultimate cure is to deal with the causes. And the cause, as I mentioned, is the modes which are operating. For example, some people, they tend to be very heavy because they eat, and they can't stop eating. They eat not three times a day, but sometimes 10 times a day. And especially sometimes they get up at 10 o'clock, at 2 o'clock in the morning, and they go through a whole feast, open up a gallon or a quart of Breyer's ice cream, and just go crazy. So some people have this. This is the mode of passion pushing you. I've got to have it. There's a desire for pleasure. As I said, the living entity by its nature is blissful, is peaceful, is knowledgeable. But when the living entity is out of sorts, out of contact with Krishna, who stimulates those feelings in us so that we don't have external cravings, we don't have external needs for peace, because you have inner peace. You don't have external need to go out and open up a quart of ice cream, because you're at peace and you're also experiencing the bliss or peace of Krishna's holy presence. And similarly with freedom, a devotee who's on a high platform like Srila Prabhupada, he feels ever free. No matter where he is, even if it's a small closet, he's always free because he's in touch with Krishna, who is everywhere. And so one has that sense and feel and presence of everywhere, even while one may be confined to a small place. Sometimes we hear that persons, they have just a little tiny cave, and they stay in it for years. They don't feel confined because their hearts are filled with the presence of God. So what happens is this, is that because of the modes which is pushing the person is determined to go on a crash diet. We hear this every time. April comes around, you hear the ads. the ads generally tell us, yes, get ready for the beach. Go on this diet. And they have this crash diet. They have these pills that you can buy. They have an exercise program. The gyms are advertising like crazy. Take off the fat from your hips. Take off fat from your belly. Take off fat from your face. You look like $1 million. And you gals who want to get into the bikinis, you'll be able to do that. And so people go on these crash diets, and they take off 25, 30, sometimes 35 pounds. And yes, they look like, quote-unquote, $1 million, or so the saying goes. And then what happens is that after the summer is over, all hell breaks loose. They start going on a major binge. And in no less than 1 to 2 weeks' time, the 35 pounds is gained back immediately. Why? Why can't they maintain that proper eating situation? They can't because the mode is pushing and they're restraining. It's like a spring. You hold it down, you hold it down, you hold it down, and you keep holding it. Finally, your energy wears out and you let go and the spring bounces up to the ceiling. Why? Because it's been compressed completely, and that compression is a force, and it has its own force, and it springs back and jumps up. So that's exactly what happened when we try to artificially change our physical or material circumstances rather than changing it in a true and in a long-lasting fashion. So the lasting fashion is the Bhakti Shastras. These Dharma Shastras deal with simply patchwork of the symptom. For example, let us say your arm comes up with a boil. Okay, you have the boil, you dress it, you treat it, and so forth. But that doesn't deal with the cause, because the next week you've got another boil, one on your shoulder. And then you treat that one. And then 2 or 3 weeks later, another boil comes up. So what's the problem? The problem is in the blood. And why is the blood polluted, or why is the blood in an toxic state? Because of what we eat. So we have to get it at the beginning, the type of food. And why are we eating types of food that come out with disease? Simply because we're attracted to those types of foods. So again, by changing the modes from, for example, ignorance or passion being predominant, by changing the modes through the process of devotional service, devotional love, chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. So chanting, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, worshipping the deity, appreciating these great books, distributing these wonderful books, doing all of these activities help to change that mode of passion and ignorance, which is predominating, to a mode of goodness. But that we don't stop there. These techniques that I've just mentioned go beyond goodness. They bring us ultimately to pure goodness. Now, what is pure goodness and what is goodness? Goodness is simply a desire. It is a desire to do good to the world. You see doctors, you see dentists, you see teachers. It's a desire to do something good to relieve suffering. This is mode of goodness. To make for good society. And quite often when a person performs actions which are in the mode of goodness, he often will take some pride in it. Yes, look, I'm curing so many people. I've replaced so many cavities in this person's mouth. I've educated so many people who have now gone on to college. So this is pride. And this pride brings us back again in another lifetime to this material world, which is what we don't want, because that's where all the misery comes. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. These things are going on. cheating, one of the tendencies of the materialistic persons. Imperfect senses, being in illusion, making mistakes. This is materialistic life. Birth, death, disease, and old age. This is materialistic life. And with it comes all the miseries that I mentioned earlier. I gave an example of person getting into fight. Persons get diseases, persons get disorders, get troubles, get problems, and they're pulled down because they're unable to manifest or enjoy sense pleasure in that difficult or troubled or situation. In other words, if the body is ill and you're lying down, then you can't enjoy all the pleasures that you had, so you're miserable. So misery is a characteristic of this materialistic society and materialistic living and having a material body. So the devotee has one thought in mind, and that is, how can I become free of all of this? How can I become free of these reactions that are mentioned? So the way that it is prescribed here is we become free by simply engaging in transcendental activities, which lift us not only to goodness, but pure goodness. Pure goodness is a form of service to the Supreme Lord, in which the devotee asks for nothing in return except the opportunity to continue serving Krishna. That's all he wants. That is his gift. That is the virtue. That is the blessing, that I can go on serving you. How shall I serve you? Help me, Lord, to serve you with loving devotion. If I can serve Krishna with loving devotion, with conscious attention that Krishna is the all in all, then not only will all of these sinful reactions be done away with, but the tendency to commit new sins will be eradicated. When the tendency to commit new sins is eradicated, what tendency do we have? To commit positive or pious, transcendental activities which give pleasure to Krishna. That's all that the devotee lives for, dies for, acts for, lives for, as I said. That's his entire focus. How can I please Krishna? How can I satisfy him? How can I bring more pleasure to him than he's already experiencing? And there are so many ways to do that. Accepting whatever is favorable for discharging devotional service, rejecting whatever is unfavorable for discharging devotional service, believing that the Lord will always protect his devotees, feel dependent always on his mercy, have no separate interest beside the interest of Krishna, and also to be meek and humble. Meekness and humility in the truest sense, not in a weakness sense, but in the sense of realizing that we are tiny and Krishna is so vast that we cannot see the end of his qualities, the end of his powers. When we realize he is so great, so glorious, so wonderful, and that he is giving us his mercy, his grace to actually serve him, that we're not doing anything for him, he is giving us the mercy to serve him. And when we take devotional service in that spirit, that this is a blessing, this is a gift, this is something I don't deserve. I have been kicking Krishna life after life. I've been discarding him, ignoring him, neglecting him, defying him, downcasting him. I've been doing everything against him, and here he is enabling me, allowing me to perform personal service for him so that I may come back to him. So just as a loving father can forget and forgive the offenses of his sons and daughters, Krishna is the most loving, the most kind, the most sweet. And if we serve in that understanding that we have been given the greatest gift, the greatest benediction, the greatest blessing, when devotional service is done in that mood, in that manner, and in that intensity, then devotional service brings us greater and greater inner peace, inner strength, inner love, inner inner joy, and inner happiness. One whose happiness is within, who is active and rejoices within, and whose aim is inward, is the perfect mystic. He is liberated in the Supreme Lord, and ultimately he attains the Supreme Lord. So Krishna is asking us to take shelter in him, and by taking shelter in him, he gives us everything that we need. And we should never feel as devotees that Krishna is overlooking us, ignoring us, discarding us, is giving us just what we deserve, and sometimes in the form of gifts, even more than we deserve. So if we really count our blessings, then Krishna will give us more and more blessings. If we feel that we should be getting more blessings because we're so wonderful, so great, we're doing so much wonderful service, everybody's being benefited, those blessings that we have may be taken away. So count our blessings. Understand that we are not even worthy of those blessings. Know always that Krishna is simply a loving father, a loving parent, a loving friend, and he is giving us his all in all. And we should, to the best of our ability, give him our all and all. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Any questions or comments? Anybody like to make? Sorry, I didn't leave much time. My standard. No questions? All right, thank you very much. Have a wonderful breakfast. Hare Krishna.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Yeah. Very, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thank you.